The World Health Organization defines addiction as a chronic relapsing condition. Dahab Private Hospital recognizes that addiction is a multifaceted illness affecting an individual's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, and practical well-being. With 28 and 90-day residential rehabilitation programs and Dahab's accredited private health fund-approved treatment service, you or your loved one can get the help you need to navigate the rehabilitation process to regain control, to overcome that addiction, and to take back your life. If this resonates, then take the first step and call Dahab Private Hospital for addiction treatment. Addiction is treatable and recovery is possible. 1-800-329-422 or dahab.com.au. Dahab is one word, D-A-Y-H-A-B, dahab.com.au. G'day team, I hope this finds you well. Welcome to another episode of The You Project. So this is quite different today. This is a very atypical podcast. This is a very different episode. It's not me interviewing anyone. There is no Melissa. There is no real plan. I have a very simple plan, and that is to talk about religion, spirituality, belief, and faith. The reason that I'm doing that is not because I think I'm going to necessarily enlighten anyone or teach you something to take away and implement into your existence. I've always kind of been, you know, I've always kind of had a foot in that religious, spiritual, faith-based space, either through choice or situational circumstance or childhood or environment or And I'm asked often about what I believe and what I don't believe, and everything from, you know, are you a Christian to are you an atheist to what are your spiritual beliefs to what do you think happens when we die to are you a Buddhist? And I get a lot of people taking stabs and guesses at what I am in inverted commas and what I am not in inverted commas. And so I honestly think that this will not be super interesting to half of you. I think some of you will be quite interested, but it's not my intention to tell you what I think is right at all, what I think is wrong, what I think anyone should do or not do. It's not my intention here to steer anyone in a direction, to stop anyone from doing anything or to compel anyone to start doing anything, but rather just to share my thoughts and ideas and experiences, of which there are many in this space. And I don't think this is going to be a particularly slick or seamless or exciting episode, but I want it to be. I've jotted down a few points. Like I said, I don't really have an overarching goal or intention with this, other than just to share with you some of my thoughts. And I think some people might resonate. Some of you might resonate. Some of you might see a bit of you in me. Some of you won't. So I would suggest see how you go. And if you think this is kind of not for you, then I'll see you next time and I'll totally understand it. So I'm calling it religion, spirituality, belief and faith, because much of my life I have been in and around all of that. So I want to just give you a bit of history and a bit of context. Some of you know some of this. But I grew up in a very religious paradigm, a very religious house. Mum was very Catholic. Dad was very Catholic. I was, by default, very Catholic. I went to only Catholic schools. I never went to any school that was not Catholic. In fact, even when I went to university to get my my undergrad degree in exercise science, I went to the Australian Catholic University, which just happened to be where I got accepted. But now is the first time in my life studying at Monash Uni where I'm doing any kind of learning in a non-religious organisation, which is really
that just dawned on me as I was saying that. That's really interesting. So I grew up in a certain model, as did many of you. I grew up in a certain model, a certain belief system, a certain operating system, a certain religious paradigm that told me, didn't suggest or didn't kind of coerce. It told me how things worked. And I was told that there was heaven, and I was told that there was hell, and I was told that there was purgatory. And these weren't stories. These weren't kind of biblical illustrations to make a point. These were facts. These were certainties. These were things that I needed to know. And I was told there was judgment. And I was told that when I died, which of course I was going to die one day, that depending on the state of my soul upon death, I would either go to heaven or hell or purgatory. We all know what heaven and hell are. And for the non-Catholics in the group, and thanks for joining us, for the non-Catholics in the group, purgatory is kind of almost like a waiting station, or a time where you do some penance, a time where you kind of go and hang out until you spend enough time there working off, paying off the sins, I guess, while people pray for you. Or I'm not exactly sure how it worked, but my understanding was that purgatory was like a waiting station. It wasn't horrible, it wasn't awesome, but it certainly wasn't heaven, but it was a better option than hell. And that was where, when you had some sins on your soul but didn't qualify you for hell, that's where you went. And of course, then there were the different kinds of sins. I don't know if it's changed since. I haven't been to Mass for quite some time, but back in the day we were taught and told about venial sins and mortal sins, and we were told that if you die with a mortal sin, like that's a big ass sin on your soul, that you would go to hell. And if you died with venial sins, then probably wouldn't go to hell, but still no good. And so there were levels or categories or classifications of sin. And I was also told that the priest was God's representative on earth, and he had the power to absolve me from my sins. And in fact, when you would go and have confession, his parting words for you were something along the lines of, while making the sign of the cross, I absolve you from your sins. Del nomine Patria Filio Spirito Santos, which is Latin for in the name of the Father, Son and the Holy Ghost. I think it's been a while. But there was a lot of indoctrination. There was a lot of programming. There was a lot of, for me, a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, and a lot of wondering about this whole kind of, you know, this whole kind of God thing. And I remember early days, I remember being in church one day, and I'm sitting next to Mum, and it was a sin, in inverted commas, wait for this will make you laugh. It was a sin for women at that point in time, or up until that point in time, for a woman to be a lady, to be on the altar at Mass, at church. And then one day I rock up and there's a lady up on the altar, and I'm like, what is that lady doing? It's a sin. Like, what is she doing? Doesn't she know? She's in church. She's on the altar. She's a woman. She's not meant to be there. And I turned around to Mum and I said, Mum, why is that lady on the altar? And she said, oh no, the Pope changed it. I go, what? She goes, no, it's not a sin anymore. And this was the first time in my life that I can remember anyway, that I'm like, well, it's a sin or it's not a sin. I didn't know that. I thought these were absolutes. What do you mean that it was a sin? So Friday, it's a sin. Sunday, not a sin. Well, who decides that? Doesn't the Almighty do that? Like, and I'm thinking, and it just threw, for me, it just sowed a seed of doubt and confusion and curiosity. Okay, that's quite a few seeds, isn't it? But nonetheless, it just made me think a little bit. And, you know, one of the things about religion, and by the way, I'm not, I'm just talking about my experience. I'm not saying Catholicism is good, bad, or any religion's good or bad. I'm just saying religion is essentially a belief system that people grow up in, isn't it? You think about if you're a Muslim and you grow up in a Muslim family, there's a fair chance you're going to be a Muslim. If you're a Christian, whatever flavor of Christian, whether or not you're a Baptist or whether or not you're a Church of England or whether or not you're a Catholic or whether or not you're a Lutheran or, you know, fill in the blank, there's a fair chance that if you grew up in a Seventh-day Adventist church that you're going to be Seventh-day Adventist. Fair chance that if mum and dad and grandma and grandpa were Buddhists, you're going to be a Buddhist. Fair chance that if dad was an atheist and so was mum, by the time you're 10, 12, 14, 16, you might be too. Because we largely become a version of who we grew up with and what we grew up with. And this is not bad. This is not good. This is just humans. This is what we do. And as I said at the top, I'm not trying to push anyone in a direction. But what I do know is, or what I believe I know, maybe I should say that, what I believe I know is that where there is religion, there is emotion. And when we start to be emotional, we become less logical. And so as I started to grow and think for myself, which isn't often encouraged within religions, they would tell you that it is. They would tell you that they want you to think for yourself, but they don't want you to think for yourself too much, because if you think for yourself too much, then you might come to a conclusion which is contrary to the standard, to the accepted, to the group think, to the generic, to the macro belief system that I live in the middle of. Because if I come to a conclusion that perhaps heaven and hell are bullshit, or that maybe purgatory's not really a thing, or maybe the Bible is not the actual literal word of God after 2,000 plus years, depending on Old Testament or New Testament, depending on which books, maybe it's not the literal word of God after 27,000 translations and being written on who knows what. I was going to say God knows what. Well, he or she does. There's another one. So all of these questions, and by the way, I'm not saying that any religion is right or wrong, and I'm not saying the Bible is not the literal word of God. Maybe it is. I kind of doubt that it is. Maybe there's elements in there. Maybe it's a complete work of fiction. Maybe it is a completely inspired divine work that has been given to humanity as a handbook to life. Maybe, I don't know. But what I do know is we need to be okay with saying, I don't know. Because when it comes to religion, or when it comes to a lot of faith-based things, or a lot of spiritual things, or a lot of these, you know, like theological things, people feel compelled to behave as though faith is not in fact faith. Faith is in fact knowledge. And for me, this is a really big distinction to draw, because faith is literally, unless I don't understand it right, but to me, my understanding of faith is believing in something that we can't prove. We can't prove there's a God, literally. We can't prove what happens when we die. We can't prove that St. Paul wrote the book of Romans, St. Paul's letter to the Romans, to the Corinthians, to the Ephesians, to the Galatians. We can't prove that he wrote that 2,000 years ago. Show me the actual evidence. Nobody can. Sure, we can kind of go, oh, well, what we know is, but do we? And I'm not saying he didn't. I'm saying that requires faith. And I'm not saying faith is not good either. I've got faith in lots of things. Doesn't mean, though, that I'm right. It just means that I have faith. I also have belief in some things, but also that doesn't mean I'm right. That just means I have belief. There's a big difference between having faith or belief, which I think, by the way, paramount, crucial, human, normal, gorgeous things sometimes, destructive things sometimes, depending on what the belief is. But there's a big difference between having a faith-based belief system and irrefutable proof evidence or knowledge. And I remember really clearly over the years questioning things, not because I wanted to be difficult or not because I wanted to be contrarian or not because I was trying to ruffle any feathers or piss anyone off or make waves, but because I was genuinely curious. And what you don't want to ask some people is, how do you know? Like, how do you know? Oh, well, you know, you just know. And, you know, God's got everything in control. Okay, how do you know? Well, you just got to have faith. Okay, so you don't know, you have faith. Well, no, we know. Well, you don't, because knowledge and faith are different, right? Oh, well, let's not get tied down in semantics. Well, no, not semantics, just thinking. See, here's one of the things that we are discouraged from doing sometimes is we are discouraged from thinking for ourselves. Again, I'm not talking about being difficult. I'm not talking about trying to create problems. I'm literally just talking about what happens when we step away from the programming and the influence and the group thinking and the operating system that we've been in and the school and the religion and all of that kind of inbound stimuli, all those stimuli that kind of got us to where we are spiritually, perhaps religiously, perhaps philosophically, cognitively, emotionally, behaviorally. What happens when we go, well, hang on, is this real and raw, and is this me? Is this really me, or is this just programmed me? Is this actually what, did I come to this conclusion? Did I come to this belief? Did I choose this, or was this chosen for me and I've just grown into it? And now here I am at the age that I am, in the situation that I'm at, and now this is just who I am because I've just become a version of the people that I've been around. This is opening the door on consciousness and self-awareness and critical thinking and thinking for oneself despite the programming. And you know what? Sometimes we have an awareness of that belief that's kind of been draped over us as we grow, that kind of that coat of belief that we've just put on and we wear it around, and we you know, mum and dad's beliefs became our beliefs by default, or our friends' beliefs became our beliefs because we don't want to argue and we trust and respect them and we want to fit in, and so their beliefs are now my beliefs and so on. But sometimes the challenge for us in the middle of that is to go, but am I being me, or am I just being a version of them? Is it okay that I question? Is it okay that I doubt? Is it okay that we don't align? Will people still love me? If they believe A and I believe B, is that okay? Can I belong to this community, this religion, this organization, this group, this whatever, if I don't agree with everything? Because if the answer's no, then I'm in a cult, because now I have to believe whatever I'm told to believe in order to belong. Well, to me, that seems kind of very conditional. And one of my observations, by the way, for the most part, I love most of Christianity. I grew up in it, and I think so many of the ideas and principles and stories and scriptures and key and core messages are so beautiful. I love it. But one of the things I found personally, and again, this is just my experience and my journey, is that Christians talk so much about unconditional love while giving conditional love and acceptance. I was going to say spiritually curious, but I guess I was more God curious when I was growing up. Anyway, And I was always fascinated with the idea of a God. I was always fascinated with the, and I just used the term God because that's the term I was given. That's the term God was the word that was programmed into my vocabulary. But feel free to interchange the word God with whatever your word is. It could be divine wisdom. It could be higher power. It could be anything. It could be, but whatever you understand to be that greater loving force or nature or divine intelligence. But I'm just going to, for this conversation, use the word God. But I was always curious about God, and I was always curious about whether or not there was something more than I could see and feel and touch. I was always very attracted to the idea that there was this astronomically bigger than I could even comprehend being that loved me. And probably because I was insecure, and probably because I was an only child, and probably because I went to a bunch of different schools, and probably because at times I felt really disconnected and lonely. And for me, the idea of being this permanent loving person or deity, I guess, that was just there for me, that loved me unconditionally, that pursuant to John 3:16, loved the world so much that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believes in him, me in this case, would not perish but would have eternal life. I'm like, oh, how good is that? I just have to believe in Jesus and I'm not going to hell, because that's in the Bible. That's in John. That's chapter 3 and verse 16. You know, and I'm like, so this is good. This is good. And so that kind of for me became a, I had some weird times. I feel like I'm rambling a little bit, but I had some weird times around that, and I would constantly have, or very frequently have, people when I was in my teens and late teens and early 20s, people coming up to me, talking to me about God, and even saying things to me that, like, God's got his hand on your life. I'm like, what does that even mean? God's got his hand. What is that? And not once or twice, but I don't know how many times. I don't want to lie, so I'm not going to pick a number, but a lot of times. I'm like, why does this happen to me? Do I look Jesus-y? What is going on with me? And not just Christians, other people too. And it was a really interesting time. And I won't say I fell into, but I was constantly being evangelized by born-again Christians, and just from about year 10 at school onwards. And no matter where I went, and I even went to other states, and it would happen. I remember I moved to Western Australia and I started work. And the first day I got there on a Sunday, I started work on a construction site with 3,000 men. On a Monday, and literally in the first 10 minutes of the first day, a dude, I remember his name was Warren, and he had on a blue hard hat. He worked for the same company I worked for, which was Steel Mains. 3,000 men, remember, it was called Worsley Aluminium Refinery. It was a gigantic construction/work site. So Warren, this bloke, makes a beeline for me across through the mud and all the crap of the site. And I kind of look up at him, and I look down, then I look back up, and he's got a fish. You know how a lot of Christians back in the day anyway, they'd have a fish symbol on their car or their whatever. I look up and I went, oh, I know exactly what's happening. And the dude comes over and he goes, I'm Warren. He goes, what's your name? And I told him, and he goes, God told me to come and talk to you. I'm like, of course he did. And I just had that so many times. I had a version of that so many times. I moved back to Melbourne. I started running a gym. I had three guys come into the gym. I had a bunch of guys come into the gym, but I was young. I was 19, believe it or not. I was running a gym in Mentone called The Stables. Very salubrious establishment that was. Again, I had three guys come in, Ross, Brian and John, who trained, and they all... might have been another dude as well, but they're all kind of cool guys. They're in the mid-20s. They had motorbikes. I had motorbikes and we had got on well. And I'm like, these guys are pretty cool. And about two or three visits in, they're like, hey, we go to a church. We reckon you should come. I'm like, here we go, of course. So I just had this repeatedly. I constantly had this. I don't know what that's about. Anyway, so I went down this. I ended up going because I wanted to see. And for those who aren't really religious, like fundamental born again Christians are extremely different to Catholics. the typical Catholic versus the typical fundamental born again Christian, quite a different cat. And so I took a little trip down that route for quite a while. I won't bore you with all of it, but fair to say I took a deep dive. I took a deep dive reading the Bible. I read the Bible every day for a very long time. I memorized chunks. I memorized hundreds of scriptures. We were encouraged to be students of the Bible so that we could use it and that we could memorize it, we could live it, we could understand it. And I did that and a whole lot of, interesting things. By the time I probably stood in front of a congregation, maybe 21 years old for the first time and preached maybe a year or so after I started attending that particular church. And so there was a lot of searching and seeking. There were good times, there were bad times. There was some messiness in the middle of that. But I will say in all of those times, I don't look back and think that was bullshit or those people were terrible. I look back and most of it for me was a positive experience. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about people. I learned a lot about I came to understand the Bible in a way that I never would have whether or not the Bible is the inspired word of God or whether or not it's a book of mumbo jumbo or whether or not it's just a really interesting book that perhaps can be used as a bit of a guide for life if you so choose. Nonetheless, I believe that there's a lot of wisdom and insight and a lot of value in it. And do I call myself a Christian these days? No, I don't. I call myself a seeker and searcher if I have to, but I don't really want to label myself. I think one of the challenges around religion and spirituality and theology more broadly is that we feel compelled like we have to pigeonhole ourselves and say, oh, I am religious or I am Catholic or I am Christian or I am agnostic or I am spiritual or I am, and I think it's okay to not have to put yourself in any category, to not have to label yourself. I'm curious. I'm uncertain. I don't know. I don't know what happens when we die. Nobody does. Everybody's going to tell you they do, but nah, they don't though. Got ideas, they've got theories, they've got faith, they've got belief. What they don't have is evidence. What they don't have is knowledge or certainty or proof. We know that, I know that when the crab died, my training partner died for 17 minutes. And when he finally came back, I said, what happened? What was there? And he went, nothing. That doesn't mean there's nothing. That just means that's his report. That's going to bother a lot of people, isn't it? That's like, I go, you don't remember anything. You were dead. There was no light. There was no angels. There was no tunnel. There was no harps. There was no St. Peter. I don't mean harps, me. I mean harps, the instrument. There was no angelic kind of vibe. There was no God on the throne. He goes, nothing. There was nothing. Right now, I wish that wasn't his answer. I really wish that wasn't his answer. I wish his answer was something fucking mind-blowing. But you know what? I can't pretend. And I'm really glad he didn't lie. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't anything. That means that was his experience. The thing is that with faith, with belief, with religion, with God, with spirituality, We tend to like to believe what we like to believe. We tend to find the thing that works for us and then build something that works optimally for our comfort and our convenience. Personally, I love the idea that there might be an all-knowing, all-loving creator of the universe, or loving, divine, inspired being that cares about me, that protects me, that watches over me, that guides me, that informs me. I love the idea of that. Do I think that that's true? Honestly, some days, yes, some days, no. Some days I think, honestly, and this is going to disappoint my Christian friends, some days I think, you know what, we die and then we turn into worm food and I become compost. It's literally what I think. I hope that's not true. I hope. Some days I feel like, in fact, many days I feel like that's not what happens, although I don't know. I've spoken before on this podcast about feeling like at times, I even don't like saying this stuff because I feel like, honestly, I was trying to keep swearing to a minimum in this episode because it just seems right, but I feel like a wanker saying, sometimes I feel like I have access to, and not because I'm special or the last person I think is special is me. In fact, I'm overwhelmingly unimpressed with myself. But there are times where I feel like I am being informed or spoken to or getting some kind of insight or wisdom or download. And I, as it's coming out of my mouth, I know that sounds like shit. I know it does. And I apologize, but it's just me being honest and real. And maybe it's just something being unlocked from my subconscious. Maybe there's a very reasonable, rational explanation. But there are some times when I know things, or I get a sense of something, or told something, or at some kind of guidance that makes less than zero sense. But do I know that there's a God? No. Do I know that there's any kind of existence beyond what we call life, our current life? I don't. Do I want there to be? Sure do. Sounds ace. And I love the idea of belief. I love the idea of faith. I love the idea of spirituality. I even love the idea of religion, as long as that religion is genuinely built on love and kindness and service. And I feel like, see, here's one of the things. Every religion pretty much talks about love as being the foundation for its existence and the basis for all behavior of the people that belong to that religion. But in reality, if we step back and we take the emotion out and we be reasonable and rational and logical, and we look at religions and religious wars and the behavior of some people in some religions over millennia, it has been anything but unconditional love that we've seen for a very long time. And again, this bothers people. But that's not an opinion. That's not a belief. There's evidence of that. And we see that still today. And one of the problems in inverted commas, or one of the challenges in inverted commas, is that virtually every religion believes it is the one true religion. Now, if you're in any religion, be it whatever, and not just, you know, when people think of religion, they just think of all the different, you know, Islam and Christianity and Buddhism and, you know, I've got friends who are Baha'i, you know, lots of different religions, but even within the religions, there are kind of almost sub-religions, you know, like under the banner of Christianity, there's you know, so many different groups, be they Anglican, be they Lutheran, be they Church of England, be they Catholic, as I said before, there's all these religions, in inverted commas, within religions, and even those subsets, you know, they believe they're the one true religion or the one true church amongst all the other Christian churches. The other Christians have got it wrong. You know, and this is the ongoing thing, is that there is way more disharmony than harmony, way more disunity than unity, way more disconnection than connection. And one of the problems, as I see it, again, just my thoughts and ideas, feel free to ignore it, feel free to turn off, but one of my thoughts and ideas is that if I believe that I am in the one true church, then I believe that everyone who doesn't have my beliefs and isn't in my church, everyone else has got it wrong. And what do you think a world of that sets us up for? Sets us up for pain, sets us up for disconnection, it sets us up for war, it sets us up for hatred and fighting. You know, and if there's a God, and I put a question mark next to that, and if God is love, I put a question mark next to that. I know what God didn't do. God didn't invent religion. God didn't invent religion. Humans invented religion. Humans created religion. Humans created dogma. Humans created most of the bullshit around religion, the traditions, the rules, the regulations. See, the fact that you can't even think out loud and challenge some of this is a problem, because it immediately speaks of closed-mindedness. Is it okay that I disagree? No. Is it okay that I question that and go, I don't think that's right? Is that okay? No, it's not. So if I want to be fill in the blank, if I want to be in this group, then I, even though there's a lot of stuff I think is good, but a few things I'm not sure of. Can I belong? No. You have to believe all of it. Really? What if it doesn't make sense to me? It doesn't matter. It's God knows, you don't know. You don't have divine wisdom or insight. You're too young in your faith. I was told that. You're spiritually immature. You're spiritually immature. Don't let your mind get in the way of God. I'm like, oh, that is so brilliant. That is so psychologically brilliant and manipulative. And I got told shit that was, looking back, so fucking clever. So clever. I'm swearing now. I'm sorry. I was going so good. But so clever. You know, yeah, and so much control, so much manipulation, so much coercion, so much misleading, so much misinformation. And I really don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is. Do I think that good things happen in churches and synagogues and temples and all kinds of religious organizations? I really do. I think some really good things happen. I think there are some awesome people within, I was going to say all religions. There's a few that I'm not sure about. I won't mention them. Let's think towards the culty end. But I think in most religions, there are really good people who are compelled by love and compassion and kindness. So I'm not at all hating on any organization or any religion at all. I'm just really encouraging. I'm encouraging you, if this stuff interests you and you've lived in a particular paradigm of thought or belief or faith or behavior for a very long time, I'm not saying change. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying think. I'm saying think for yourself. And don't let your fear get in the way of your ability to think critically and ask questions. And if you're in any kind of group, religious or not, you're in any kind of group where you are really discouraged from thinking for yourself or asking very reasonable questions, Well, you know what I think about that. I don't think that's the group to belong to. I think within any organization, religious, spiritual, or other, you should be encouraged to explore your own truth, to discover if you might do a little stock take, or you might do a little spiritual or religious journey and come back to the place metaphorically that you started and go, I am sure this is where I need to be. And if that's the case, then I think that's amazing, because you are there because that's where you need to be and you should be. But there are so many people that are in certain religious or spiritual places through fear, through manipulation, through coercion, through programming. You know, and even me sitting here at 57 years young, I still feel uncomfortable saying these things because I feel guilty. I still feel guilty. I'm still worried about some of my, I have really good friends that are pastors in churches and I love them. In fact, some of my best friends are Christians. And I mean, full on tambourine banging, rafter swinging, dyed in the wool. If loving the Lord's wrong, I don't want to be right to Christians. Full on. And I love them. I don't want them to hear this, because not because it's not true, but because I don't want to hurt them. I don't want to hurt them. But I also don't want to conform. And I also want to be real. And I also want to be honest. And I don't know. And for me, just saying, I believe, just because that's what I've been told to say, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And when we spend our time around, or primarily most of our time around, people who only think or believe or behave a certain way due to their collective common faith, we find ourselves in an echo chamber of thought. We find ourselves in an echo chamber of religiosity and an echo chamber of belief and behavior. And again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't believe or belong or have faith, or that you shouldn't be part of something bigger than you in that sense. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, you know, when we only listen to or pay attention to or respect or look up to people who think like us and believe like us and behave like us, then we're now fully programmed into confirmation bias, where anyone who contradicts us is wrong. Anyone who doesn't believe like us is wrong. Anyone who doesn't live like us or have our value system or our spiritual kind of ness, our spirituality, anyone who has a counter opinion is wrong. And it's not, and I'm not saying that, oh, they are right. I'm saying that we can't even consider another opinion or another theology, philosophy, idea, because we're so entrenched. And as I said before, and when I know, in inverted commas, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, when I know that I'm right, well, then I also know that anyone who doesn't think or believe like me is wrong. And that scares me a little bit. I spent about 4 years in my early 20s, 19, 20, 21, 22, about 4 years, 23. It doesn't matter where it was. And the people that were there, I still periodically see some of them, and I love them and I wish only great things for them. But when I was part of that church, I was told things, unequivocally told things, not suggested. I was told that certain things were going to happen in the world. And I was told this as certain as the sky is blue, grass is green sometimes, gravity is real. And I was told that, you know, by the time I was 30, that the world, 30, 35, so 10, 15 years down the track, that the world would be a cashless society, that there would be a one world government, that there would be this thing called the mark of the beast in place, which it's spoken about in the last book of the Bible, which is called Revelation. And it says, there's a scripture that says that no man shall buy or sell save he has the mark of the beast. In other words, nobody will be able to buy anything or sell anything without this thing called the mark of the beast. And this was tying into a one world government and a cashless society and the Antichrist and all of these things, which sounds terrifying, I know. I'm sorry for scaring the shit out of you. But all of these things that I was taught and told and trained, and I'm like, wow. And this was a directive. This is what's happening. And here I am, decades later, and those things haven't happened. And that's okay. I'm not mad at anyone. But in that time, in that place, hundreds of people in that church, it was just very, and by the way, you might think, oh, that's a cult. No, there are lots of churches that think like that. That's not like, this is not unique. There's a lot of churches all over the world that have what's called end times teaching. So it's very prevalent, more prevalent than you might think. And I'm not saying, so they're all terrible, they're bad. They're actually, the people I was at church with, mostly awesome people. And even my pastor back then was, I believe, an awesome man who just got stuff wrong, just like everyone gets stuff wrong. But what we were strongly discouraged from doing was thinking for ourselves or disagreeing or questioning. And that's the bit I hate. That's the bit I hate. And I remember questioning things. And I remember thinking, I remember being many times thinking clearly and critically at something that even in the context of what I'd already committed myself to, this godly existence, this, you know, back then you could imagine my existence. I was a straighty 180 then. I'm pretty straighty 180 now, but I didn't swear. I didn't have sex with anyone. I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. I read the Bible every day. I was very, very, very disciplined. I didn't want to be religious. I wanted to learn. I wanted to get to know this God person. I wanted to understand this whoever God was. I wanted to know that. That was my driving force. I didn't want to belong to a group. I wasn't outrageously insecure that I needed to be part of some gang. I was actually driven by something different. But yeah, it was a really, really interesting time for me. And I was told many times when I would ask questions, not to ask questions. And when something seemed to me to be, I wouldn't have said this back then, but kind of like bullshit. And I would say, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't seem right. And I would doubt things, which is a really healthy, normal, okay thing to do. I was always referred to Doubting Thomas, who was one of the 12 apostles who doubted that Jesus had risen from the dead. And I was always taught that, I was always told and programmed that my doubt was my lack of faith. It was because I wasn't faithful enough. It was because I didn't believe enough. So my very intellectual, reasonable doubts were thrown back in my face as flaws. And again, this is a really good way to control and manipulate people, isn't it? It's like, well, no, there's no problem with our theology, Craig. There's no problem with this theory. There's no problem with this idea that we're presenting to you that kind of seems ludicrous. No, the problem is with you, and your doubt is actually a sin. And so I was literally told that the more that I doubted, the more I was in sin, and it was because I wasn't faithful enough. And all of these very clever, manipulative, controlling things, I'm making it sound terrible, aren't I? But these are my experiences. But I can say most of my bad experiences in church, and there were many good ones, and most of my bad experiences going down other spiritual rabbit holes. And I don't want to bore you. I feel like I'm going too long already, but they were not about, if there's a God, let's just go if, if there's a divine force, if there is some overwhelmingly loving power that connects with us or guides us or lives in us or through us, I'm going to say that that force, whatever we call that force, God or whatever your word is, for me, I'm going to go with God. God was never the problem. For me, the issue was always people. And again, there were beautiful people, but there were people that were fucking terrifying. And there were people that were walking around in the Christian suit that just weren't living it. And for me, the analogy is people who might wear a tracksuit and call themselves an athlete because they're wearing a tracksuit. Well, to be an athlete, you need to live and breathe and move and eat and train and behave like an athlete. And then when you're doing all of those things, then you might be an athlete. But putting on a pair of runners or a tracksuit or acting or talking like an athlete doesn't make you an athlete. So too, being a loving, caring, kind person of whatever faith or denomination or religion, that doesn't make you godly. That makes you a person that wants to look godly. Just belonging to a group doesn't make you special. It just means you belong to a group. And so for me these days, I try to, let's come back to love. So for me, and this might sound a bit naff and I can't explain this any more eloquently or, I don't know what the word is. See, not eloquent at all. But for me, it comes back to the ever-present kind of message through most of the religious text is love. And my belief is that when I'm coming from a place of love, which is not all the time, but when I am coming from a place of love, and whether or not that love manifests as kindness or acts of service or generosity or patience or some words of encouragement or some kind of support in some way or creating an opportunity for someone or opening a door or giving someone some money or helping someone out practically, whatever that love looks like, when I am coming from a place of love, for me that's the closest thing to religion that I will be part of, that I will, because I think with love, the only rule is love. There is no, you know, you're either loving people or you're not. And if you're loving people, then you're ticking the box. There's not 300 different criteria and rules. There's not a bunch of people that I've got to keep happy to keep my membership to the love club. You know, so for me, you know, it is about coming back to, when I'm talking about living an aligned life, I'm talking about living a life aligned to my values, of course, and I have a bunch of values, but I would say my core value is love. I'd say that's my core value. Whether or not that's loving myself, not in an egotistical way, but just being kind to me and not beating me up and not hating me too much, because there's no bigger critic of me than me. And I can tell you, as I've been sharing on this podcast 27 times, I've thought about stopping. And even now, there's a 50-50 chance no one will ever hear this. So if you're hearing it, I decided to go ahead. Why? Because I think who would want to listen to this? But not just love for self, but love for others and love, you know, love for the planet, love for animals, love for, you know, just love, you know. And for me, as naff and as fluffy as that might sound, that's what matters. So religion, spirituality, belief and faith, open-mindedness, kindness, loving people who don't necessarily think like me or behave like me, being accepting, being tolerant. I'm not talking about being tolerant of heinous behavior. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I'm just talking about people who, you know, people who aren't necessarily the same as me or you. You know, it's like, and there's so much that we don't understand and we don't know. Like you think about even the idea of spirituality, you go, well, what even is spirituality? What does spirituality mean? Last year I did this little exercise and I sent, I've mentioned this once before on the podcast, but I sent 10 friends of mine who are in some way, shape or form, somewhere between quite spiritual and literally uber spiritual, like pastors of, one of them I sent to is a pastor of a church of thousands of people. And I said to all of them, could you do me a favor? Could you tell me what spirituality means? Not from the internet, not some kind of reference through a theological book, not some definition from the dictionary, not what someone taught you or told you or trained you or programmed you to say, but can you tell me what being spiritual means for you? I don't want a global definition. I want your understanding of your experience of what it means, what it is. And every single one of them sent me back a response that was nothing like each other. There are a few similarities, but they were very diverse. And they all essentially said different things about the same thing. They all answered the one question, and they would say they were all had a very large spiritual component to their existence. But when I said, what is that? There was almost no agreement. And so I think when it comes to something that there's very little agreement or consensus on, there's lots of curiosity, there's lots of theories, there's lots of belief, there's lots of faith, but there's very little knowledge. There's very little knowledge. There's very little data. And by the way, that doesn't mean at all that it's not real. It just means that we can't understand it. And how good is that? The older I get, the way more comfortable I get with not understanding things, but nonetheless, do I have a level of faith that there's something bigger than me, more powerful, more divine, more loving, something that I can't even begin to fathom or understand? Do I have a level of faith in that? Yes, I absolutely do. Do I know that I could be 100% wrong? Yes, I absolutely do. Am I okay with being right or wrong? Yes, I am. And I think this is the challenge, or one of the many challenges for all of us in this space, is to hold on to those beliefs, to hold on to that faith with a loose grip and with humility and with awareness and with courage. It takes courage. It takes real courage to go, this is what I believe, but I could be wrong. It takes ego and arrogance to go, this is what I believe, and anyone who doesn't believe what I believe is wrong. And that's essentially what every religion says. So I'll wind up there, but whatever it means from me to you, I may or may not know you, I may or may not have met you, but I hope that you're okay with me telling you in some way, shape or form that I love you and that I care about you and that we may never meet, but I genuinely hope. See, I'm a bit emotional already. I genuinely hope the very best for you, and not because there's a hook catch agenda, not because I want anything from you, but because I want something for you. And I truly believe when we can do this and when we can want the best for others, then that's where the beauty of life is. That's where the great stuff is, where we don't have to belong to a group or a club. We don't have to be right. We don't have to know. We don't have to do anything that's, you know, universally approved of. Anyway, love your guts. Hope you got something out of that. I'm not sure anyone did, but I think it's time for bed. See you next time.
The addict in your family might need you to take the first step for them. They Have Private Hospital for Addiction Treatment has the experience, staff, resources, and processes to help you help your loved one. DAHAB's model of intensive rehabilitation has revolutionised the practice of addiction treatment in Australia. Registered with the DHHS, Department of Health and Human Services, DAHAB now offers rehabilitation programs for drug, alcohol and gambling addiction and is a private health fund approved treatment service. So if you or someone you care about is fighting addiction, there is hope. Addiction is treatable. Recovery is possible. Just ask me, call. And there is light at the end of the tunnel. DAHAB Private Hospital for Addiction Treatment. Call DAHAB on 1-800-329-422 or learn more at DAHAB, DAYHAB, or one word, .com.au.